The push for equality, both at the Supreme Court and here in Jacksonville. That conversation is just ahead. Well, good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect, always live on the radio, and now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, the High Court hears historic arguments today on same-sex marriage. We're going to talk all about it, and the number is 549-2937 to join the show. Then later, a local Vietnamese-American man remembers the fall of Vietnam, a preview of tonight's American Experience series on PBS. Plus, the next phase for creators after OneSpark. All of that ahead. But first this morning, the Supreme Court assumes the bench today to hear historic oral arguments on same-sex marriage. The High Court will consider whether the 14th Amendment requires states to license same-sex marriages, and does it require them to recognize marriages performed in other states? As this dramatic hearing plays out in the Capitol, the LGBT equality movement has come to Jacksonville in a big way as activists continue to push for a comprehensive human rights ordinance. At the same time, that T in the LGBT acronym for transgender is getting renewed awareness and discussion this week after Bruce Jenner's landmark interview on his transition with ABC's Diane Sawyer. So there's so much to discuss. Here to tell us his thoughts, we welcome Dan Merkin, chair of the JAX Coalition for Equality. Dan, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
And as we reboot our phone system, we'll try to get to your calls in a few moments. Just bear with us on that. But let's begin with the High Court. Hearing arguments right now on same-sex marriage. This is an historic oral argument being heard as we speak. Your reaction?
We've known this was coming for a long time, and we're greatly anticipating what the Supreme Court will do. Obviously, they're hearing the oral arguments today. There's a number of cases that they're hearing from four different states, Michigan, Ohio, Tennessee, and Kentucky. And they're going to be listening or trying to discern two main issues, which you already kind of laid out, which is one, do states have the right to refuse recognition of marriages performed in other states? And two, do they have the right to discriminate, basically, and say certain people cannot get married if they're of the same gender?
And after conflicting rulings in a number of states and different courts all over the country, people are hoping for certainty on this, for the High Court to resolve this once and for all, because couples' marriages are legal in some states but not in others.
Right, and that's what the real problem is that we have right now a hodgepodge of laws that make it really unclear if somebody's marriage is recognized or not. So if you travel from one state to another, you may be putting yourself at risk for not having the same rights and benefits that you would have if you stayed in, say, a state that had full marriage recognition. You know, that's kind of what happened with the Obergefell case, in that they were legally married in another state and they came back to Ohio, and Ohio did not want to recognize their marriage, and therefore, you know, when Obergefell's partner passed away, they would not put him on the death certificate, and that, you know, that was a real something that, you know, shouldn't have happened.
And if you're just tuning in, as we speak with Dan Merkin of the JAX Coalition for Equality, let us know your thoughts as the Supreme Court hears historic oral arguments today on same-sex marriage. We're discussing the issue both as it plays out on the High Court and here in Jacksonville. We'll go to your calls in a few moments at 549-2937. Now, let me ask you this, Dan. Marco Rubio, senator, likely to run for president. Other candidates looking ahead to 2016, speaking out today, saying that they deplore this argument. They support traditional marriage. And even though about half the states have legalized same-sex marriage, a great percentage of Americans, no longer the majority, but a sizable percentage of Americans still are not comfortable with this. What would you say to those listening right now who just disagree with this monumental social change that we're witnessing happening here in real time?
Yeah, the change around this issue has happened so quickly. You know, it was not just that long ago, 2008, where the voters in Florida, voted to pass a constitutional amendment But the reality is, you know, if a vote were held on that today, that would not pass. It would fail miserably. You know, the reality is that as gay and lesbian people tell their stories, their families become aware that they are in, you know, part of their families. People's hearts and minds are changing rapidly. And I know for those folks out there that you know, haven't quite got there yet on marriage equality, I just want them to, know that marriage equality really helps people in the long run. It provides the same thing that other people have been, you know, using marriage for years, which is stability. It provides for, a social contract for you know, where people take care of each other. And that's really, really important in our society, is that everybody should have the ability to care for a loved one and to have their relationship recognized. And really, in the long run, that is better.
The Jacksonville Coalition for Equality has been lobbying for some time now to encourage city officials to update Jacksonville's human rights ordinance to cover the LGBT community. The other day, Mayor Alvin Brown said he'd order a review of all policies to determine if discrimination does exist. The city council voted down updating the HRO a few years ago just by one vote. And those who voted no said they didn't accept the argument that discrimination against LGBT citizens is enough of an issue to warrant the change. What are your thoughts about recent events around this issue in the city?
Well, we acknowledge that, you know, that there have actually been a lot of changes since 2012. Since 2012, when our city council voted down the substitute bill, which only included sexual orientation protections. I also want to mention that the original bill also included gender identity and expression protections, and that bill was voted down by a much wider margin. But we've learned a lot since then, and I think society has moved a lot since then. In 3 years, and you know, we can just see since then that dozens of other cities have passed these comprehensive human rights ordinances, leaving Jacksonville as the most populous city in the United States that hasn't passed it. And, you know, ordering review is going to discover just that, is that, you know, more and more places are offering these protections. They do what they're supposed to do. There's no, there's no real increase in concern. And they actually have an effect of eliminating bias over time, because cities that have passed these have shown that the number of claims over time actually goes down, because as people become aware that there is a protection in place, they're more likely to follow the rule of law and not discriminate.
Have you asked the mayor's office to go farther than ordering a review to sign an executive order? Have you reached out to the GOP candidate in the race, Lenny Curry, to encourage him to do such a stance?
Our coalition has not directly asked out. There have been people in our community that have. And we are, you know, we would welcome any sort of clarification as to how broad or how deep the study will go in terms of, like, what discrimination is actually being studied, because that wasn't exactly clear in the statement that was put out by the mayor's office. It was a overall comprehensive study of discrimination, but we want to make sure that LGBT discrimination is one of the things that is definitely addressed.
Now, you mentioned gender identity and expression. That aspect of the updated human rights ordinance was a sticking point a few years ago for many members of the Jacksonville City Council. Just the other day, Olympic icon Bruce Jenner gave a landmark interview to ABC's Diane Sawyer, where he said publicly what many had long suspected, that he identifies as female and that he is transitioning. He is, when people don't understand what the T is in LGBT, it stands for transgender. How do you see his interview and his story affecting Americans' perceptions and understanding of the transgender community?
Well, I think, you know, Bruce Jenner revealing being transgender is really an important piece of the conversation. There have been many, many high-profile transgender people, out in the media lately. The character from Orange is the New Black, and so many others, where the awareness around transgender is being heightened. You know, another show, Transparent, people might have seen that. You know, so these portrayals of people who are transgender are becoming more commonplace. And I think, you know, people are starting to understand that with a greater ability. And that's really, it's really important, because what we know is people who are transgender experience a lot of bias. Studies have shown that almost 50% of transgender people have had issues finding work. About 20% of transgender people have difficulty finding housing. And a lot of it is due to the bias that people have against them. And so part of the work that we need to do is continue to educate, illuminate, and have people understand that, you know, we probably all know somebody that's transgender or gender variant, and we maybe have never really talked about it or thought about it, but it's now's the time to do that and really kind of, you know, drill down into any sort of biases that we might have and overcome them.
Let's go to your calls as the Supreme Court hears historic oral arguments today on same-sex marriage. What are your thoughts? 549-2937 to join the show. Mark is in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I was just curious about something. The libertarian in me, I don't really, it doesn't matter to me if, you know, gay people want to get married or anything and enjoy the legal protections of their union. But I guess my question is, when does it stop? And by that I mean, all right, if the definition of marriage is going to be expanded or altered, if you will, to include same-sex unions, then what about four people? What about a man and three wives, or three women and one man, or, you know, whatever it might be? What about a parent and a child in order to escape estate taxes? When does the definition of marriage stop and say, all right, this is all we're going to allow right here? And I mean, it may sound a little bit weird, but I mean, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have really thought that we were having this discussion that we're having now about the definition of marriage.
Yeah, and that's Mark in St. Augustine. Mark, thanks for the call. Dan Merkin.
Well, Mark, I'll just remind you that, you know, marriage has always been something that over time has been defined differently. And, you know, if those arguments come up, I think then people should have those discussions. And I would guess that they would conclude that that's not what it's about. But for right now, people have concluded overwhelmingly it's changing that, you know, people of the same sex should be able to marry. That's where the majority is right now. And I would also like to point out, just, you know, 50 years ago, you know, it used to be illegal for people of two different races to marry. And, you know, people had that conversation and concluded that was not right to bar people from marrying each other based on race. So I think we're adults and we can have those conversations and draw the appropriate conclusions.
And when you say the definition of marriage has changed over time, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think, you know, let's be honest that as we've evolved as a country and a nation, you know, the rights and responsibilities of, you know, for instance, women in marriage weren't always viewed as equal partners. They weren't even allowed to own property. I mean, these are things that over time, the rights and privileges associated with marriage have changed. And so, again, as a society, we can collectively have adult conversations about what's fair and what's right and what's just and come to really good conclusions.
549-2937. Let's go to Jody in Mandarin. Hey, Jody, what are your thoughts?
Good morning, Melissa. Good show. Thank you very much for addressing this topic. My thoughts are that I'm wondering if your guest knows about the recent cases in Florida, at least one, where a couple married in, I believe it was Massachusetts, moved here to Florida with an entire family, an intact family, and sought divorce in a county outside of our circuit and our district. But initially, that divorce claim was rejected by a Florida court as having no jurisdiction because Florida doesn't recognize same-sex marriage so far. Well, the couple has a child and property together, and the case went up on appeal and was rejected on the concept that that this local circuit court where it came from was going to have to deal with the issue because there's a child at stake, there's property rights at stake, there are meaningful issues that are appropriate for the court to deal with, regardless of whether this particular court disagrees with the issue, the idea of same-sex marriage. So I thought that was interesting, and I wondered what your guest might have to say about that case and cases like that in Florida. in light of what's going on at the Supreme Court today.
Yeah, thank you. That's a Jody in Mandarin. And same-sex marriage is now legal in Florida, though. But go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, well, Jody, I mean, I think that's what's so important about what's happening before the Supreme Court today is that hopefully we're going to get some clarity and they're going to have a ruling that comes down in, you know, late June that really kind of, you know, says, you know, that states will recognize marriage and they will do what needs to be done in terms of, like, you know, marriage, divorce, family recognition, all that sort of stuff. And that's really critical at this time that we get that guidance from the Supreme Court so that there is clarity, so that we don't have judges going off and making decisions that may not actually, you know, follow the intent of the law.
The court is tilted toward the conservative side. They've made a number of conservative rulings in recent years, the Roberts Court. Some have been surprising, though. For example, the High Court upheld the Affordable Care Act. That wasn't necessarily a given, and that was seen as, certainly by conservatives, as a more progressive ruling. How do you expect the court to rule on this issue? Do you expect a sweeping ruling or perhaps a much more narrow ruling?
Well, I mean, based on the recent rulings that happened in Windsor, and on the Prop 8 case, it was a 5-4 decision, you know, and Justice Kennedy has a history of writing pro-LGBT decisions. He was there in, you know, Romer Evans and a few other cases where, you know, he made pretty clear that, you know, discrimination against LGBT people or this particular animus is not, doesn't rise to the justification of creating a law that discriminates. So you can't use animus as a reason to deny people access and rights.
And lots of calls as the High Court hears arguments, historic oral arguments today on same-sex marriage. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Dale is on the west side. Hi, Dale. How are you?
Oh, hey. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't interrupt. But I really love your show. I'm the sustainer.
Thanks. No, you're not interrupting. We welcome your call.
Oh, okay. I was just thinking that I guess throughout history we have thought of marriages between a man and a woman. And so a same-sex marriage is slightly different. Perhaps a pleasant name, but a little bit different, like a carriage could be thought of, and that might better define it and come up with something that's just a slightly different name but has all the same rights.
And what? So you don't like the name, you're saying?
No, I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm happy for the gay couples who want to get married there. But I think it offends some more fundamentalist religious types, and it is a little bit different. So isn't it possible to extend the same rights but call it something slightly different?
Not call it marriage.
Call it carriage.
That's Dale.
We're getting carried.
Dale on the west side. Thanks, Dale. Dan.
Well, Dale, there's a real reason why it has to be called marriage, and that's because that's when we look at our legal code, that's what we're talking about, you know. So having it across the country where we define marriage, in order for people of the same sex, if they get married, in order for them to qualify for all those benefits and, you know, rights and privileges, that's the way the code's written. So that's why we call it marriage, because that's what it is. Now, I know that there are sometimes folks that have you know, religious objections to marriage, and I think it's important to make those distinctions that, you know, we have the state-sanctioned marriage and we have religious ceremonies, and those are two distinct things.
Lots of comments on Twitter and Facebook today as we discuss the Supreme Court's historic oral arguments on same-sex marriage. We really welcome your comments on social media. Robert on our Facebook page has the Coalition for Equality thought of challenging the Curry campaign to give a public position on an amended HRO. Bart asked Mayor Brown why he failed to assist passage of an HRO, even though he says he's against discrimination. And on Twitter, Crystalis writes, LGBT discrimination not enough of an issue to warrant a change? Do they want for this to become an issue? Let's go to an anonymous call in St. John's County. Good morning, St. John's. How are you?
Excellent. Wanted to ask a question. I think we have two things that are going in opposite directions. One is that you have a gain in momentum for marriage equality, and on the other hand, you have this label of LGBT, the B standing for bisexual, and I don't understand how you can have this social contract or marriage to individuals if that B stands for bisexual and implies that you would be married to someone of the same or opposite sex, but also have feelings for the other.
Okay, thanks for that call. And just to be clear, the argument before the court today, the plaintiffs are arguing that marriage is a fundamental right for any two people, regardless of gender, that the due process and equal protection clauses of the Constitution give gays and lesbians equal marriage rights. No mention of bisexuality, but go ahead, Dan Merkin.
Well, again, you know, the marriage is, you know, defined, going to be defined as two individuals, regardless of gender. You know, so if somebody is bisexual, I mean, those, they may have feelings for people of, you know, either gender, but ultimately, if they're going to get married, they're going to be committing to one person, and that's what that's about.
Let's go to Carrie in Riverside. Hi, Carrie. Your thoughts. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Sure. You know, I think it's really important that people support the marriage equality. You know, take the gay name out of it, take the black name out of it, take the labels out of it. And it's a bond between two people who decide to get married and have all of the legal rights with that everybody else is afforded in the United States of America. People are using this as a sexual issue. They are talking about sex in marriage, and that is why they're against it. They are not against people actually marrying each other. They are against the act of sex once people are married. So, you know, if people could just take a look at it that way, take all of the labels and everything out of it. It's two people who love each other. It doesn't affect anybody else that is anywhere near them. And, you know, they just need to stop with all of the ridiculous fight back.
That's Carrie in Riverside. And let's also provide a little more context to today's oral arguments. Six separate lawsuits on behalf of 32 plaintiffs against same-sex marriage bans in Ohio, Michigan, Tennessee, and Kentucky were denied in November at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, thus leading to the high court. The states I just mentioned are arguing against same-sex marriage, saying that it's a matter of states' rights, that same-sex marriage may harm the institution of marriage and is not in the best interest of children. Dan, as you pointed out, we do expect a ruling from the high court this summer. And so as we wait for that ruling, how will the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality proceed locally on these issues?
Well, I can tell you, we have a few things coming up that are really important. One thing that we have actually going on today, and weather permitting, we have scheduled a rally for Memorial Park in Riverside, and we are commemorating the oral arguments that are being held today. So the event is scheduled for 6:30. Now, we know that the forecast is for rain, so we're working on an alternative plan, and we hope to have that figured out by 4 o'clock if, in fact, the rain does not subside. So please visit our website or our Facebook page, which is jacksequality.org for the website, or facebook.com/jacksequality, and we'll have updates there if we do, in fact, move the venue for the event. So that's one of the things that we're working on locally. You know, our coalition is not primarily focused on marriage. It is something that we do occasionally touch on because we know that if people in Jacksonville, for instance, get married, and if they are the same sex, that they may face discrimination based on their sexual orientation. And so that's one of the things that we're continuing to push for, an inclusive human rights ordinance that would, not allow for that kind of discrimination to occur in the areas of housing and employment and public accommodation.
Dan, thanks for joining the program.
Well, thank you, Melissa.
Dan Merkin is chair of the JAX Coalition for Equality. Much more still ahead, meantime, later in the hour, how the creators around OneSpark are moving to the next phase in Jacksonville's innovation culture. We'll tell you all about that. But up next, a local voice speaks out on the fall of Vietnam, sharing his powerful memories. It's a preview of PBS's The American Experience. That's in a moment here on First Coast Connect.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Relax Radio WJCT 89.9 HD3 is your music station, playing the songs you remember best from the Beatles, Elvis, Frank Sinatra, Barbra Streisand, and Motown, 24 hours a day, only on WJCT 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
Thank you so much for supporting WJCT's Spring Pledge Drive and funding your favorite programs. Because of your contributions, we not only met our goal, we exceeded it. If you didn't get a chance to call in during the drive, you can still make a pledge at 904-353-9528 or by going online to wjct.org. Spend some time in The Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Dinosaur Train. The Dinosaur Train is rolling into Orange Park. Thrasher Horn Center and WJCT present Jim Henson's Dinosaur Train Live, Buddy's Big Adventure, on Tuesday, May 12 at 6 p.m. See the beloved stars of the hit PBS series come to life on stage in your hometown for the first time. Join Buddy, Tiny, King, Don, and their family and friends in this fun-filled, interactive musical trip back in time. Tickets are on sale now at 904-276-6815 or thcenter.org.
WJCT Radio Reading Service is for lovers of the printed word. And if you or someone you know needs help reading the local newspaper, tell them about the WJCT Radio Reading Service. They can think with the editorials and laugh at the comics, all read out loud by WJCT volunteers. If you'd like details on getting the free subchannel radio, go to wjct.org/radio/reading and fill out a listener application.
He's made his mark on the nation's capital. From the Washington Post Company to special assistant to U.S. Senator Howard H. Baker Jr. to speechwriter for President Gerald Ford, Pat Butler was appointed by President Reagan to the National Council of the Humanities, and he is now president and CEO of the Association of Public Television Stations. Pat Butler is our luncheon guest at WJCT Studios on May 7th. Visit WJCT.org or call 358-6327 to get your tickets.
Welcome back. Well, in April of 1975, the North Vietnamese Army was closing in on Saigon as South Vietnamese resistance was crumbling. Approximately 5,000 Americans remained with just 24 hours to get out. Their South Vietnamese allies, co-workers, and friends faced certain imprisonment and possibly death if they stayed behind. But there was never an official evacuation plan in place. Still, over the last days in Vietnam, with the clock ticking and the city under fire, 135,000 South Vietnamese managed to escape with help from a number of heroic Americans who just took matters into their own hands, putting together makeshift operations in a desperate effort to save as many people as possible. PBS's acclaimed American Experience series presents Last Days in Vietnam tonight at 9 on WJCT television and shows us this story. I spoke with one Vietnamese-American immigrant who calls Jacksonville home as he shared with me his memories of the fall of Vietnam and coming to this country. His name is Tri Vu. Take a listen. Tri Vu, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
It's fascinating to speak with you in keeping with PBS's American Experience series on the fall of Vietnam. When you think back to those months, what memories come back most vividly for you?
Well, I left Vietnam when I was 19 years old, and it was very, very scary. You know, it's just like beyond description. We had to go through a lot of obstacles just to get out of the country.
Like what? Tell me about it.
Well, each Vietnamese refugee would have their own his own story, and in my case, our family, we bribed some people, some government people, and to get access to go to the airport, for example, and then doing that travel just from home to the airport, we get shot at many times, get stopped at, and so it was very, very scary. It's beyond description. Mm-hmm. You know, we could hear bullets flying above our head and everything. So
you were 19 years old.
Uh-huh.
And tell me a little bit about your family at the time.
We have a big family, and we have 8 children in the family. And because at that time we didn't know which method to get out of the country was the safe way or even possible way, so we decided to try in 3 different methods. We divided the family into 3 groups. So one group would go one way, another group would go another way, another group would go another way. So hopefully we were hoping that at least one group or 2 groups, you know, would make it. And it turned out that we all made it out, and then we'd use the Red Cross to help us reunite in this country.
How, can you tell me a little bit about how you got out, just some of the specific steps that happened?
How to get out? Okay. For example, we paid, like $1,000 per person to get transportation just to go from home to the airport. And because during that time it's all, under curfew, so there's nobody out the street, nobody. And it was extremely quiet. You could hear a pin drop. So it's like in my group, we all kind of sneak in, we kind of lay inside the Jeep, which is a small Jeep, and we had all the luggages that kind of cover our whole body, just so that they wouldn't see anybody there, So in front, the driver and the passenger in the front, they're all military people. So we were hoping that would help us get to the airport. And so, they are American military soldiers. So anyway, but it turns out that they, during the in that trip, just to from home to the airport, there were several checkpoints. So they would stop us and they would ask, to see the Jeep. And so at that time, the driver was a little bit arrogant, so he decided to stop for 1 second, and then he handed money to the guards, and then he got up in his Jeep and started driving. And I could hear, in Vietnamese, so I understood everything, but the driver did not. He started driving, and so the soldiers at the checkpoint said, if you don't stop, I'm going to shoot you. The guy just kept going, so... Oh my gosh! And then all of a sudden, we heard all these gunshots everywhere. And here I was hiding, under the luggage, and it was so scary. So finally, they stopped the Jeep. Am I too detailed?
No, no. Keep going, please.
Okay. So anyway, so when we stopped, and soldiers on the street came up, walked up, and started asking, order everybody to get out. Of course, me and my group, who sat in the back of the Jeep, you know, we just tried to hide under the luggages. We didn't move. So they started removing every single luggage. And then as a 19-year-old kid, and I was, a boy at the age I was supposed to join the Army anyway, and I could feel a tap on my head. Somebody tap on my head and say, get out. So I thought, oh, my gosh, my life was over. So we had to all get out.
Mm.
And so they checked the papers and all that stuff, and then all of a sudden there was another American soldier, maybe from the same group, showed up because he heard the gunshots. So he came out and apologized to the other guy and everything, and so finally they let us go.
Wow. And how did you end up in Jacksonville?
Well, so when we got out, we knew some family members that we used in, some American that we knew in, who was a professor in Vietnam. So we knew him for 4 years. So anyway, and he was teaching at the University of Arkansas. And so it just turned out that we were in the Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, refugee camp. And so he sponsored us out, and then I went to school. I got out of the refugee camp at 2 o'clock in the morning. And at 7:30 that same morning, I went to my first class at University of Arkansas because, everything was, we prepared everything, paperwork ahead of time. And so after school there, I went to University of Arkansas Architecture School. So after 5 years, I graduated and I got a job in Jacksonville, Florida. So that's, so I moved to Jacksonville, Florida.
Wow. And have you been back to Vietnam at all in recent years?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been back about 8-9 times.
What's it like
so
now?
It's completely different. Oh my gosh. Every time I came back, the first time I went back was with the U.S. delegation, U.S. Department of Commerce. And I was so sad, so depressed seeing the whole country from, the north, which is Hanoi, and the south, which is Saigon. Everything was just so dusty and everything, and it looked so sad, anyway. And then the year after that, I went back with my family just so that they could find their roots, with my children. And so anyway, I could see a huge difference even the next year. And so ever since then, every time I went back, it's like a completely different country. And this is so much more developed than when I saw it the first time.
Well, it's fascinating to speak with you about it. Thanks for sharing your memories with us. Tri Vu came to this country, studied, moved to Jacksonville, and became an acclaimed architect. He is the president of TTV Architects, Inc. in Jacksonville. He is instrumental in Jacksonville's successful effort to light our downtown bridges, among other accomplishments. And make sure to tune in tonight at 9 o'clock for Last Days in Vietnam on WJCT Television. We're back in a moment.
Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And we're the guys from Deemable Tech.
Hey, if you've got a question about your computer, mobile phone, tablet, or the internet,
and who doesn't,
we're here to help.
Join us Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on WJCT.
And check out our podcast online at deemable.com.
That's deemable.com.
Who will be Jacksonville's next mayor? Jacksonville has distinct neighborhoods with unique issues and priorities, including growth, crime, traffic, and investment. Find out where the candidates stand. WJCT has teamed up with First Coast News and the Florida Times Union to present a debate with mayoral candidates Alvin Brown and Lenny Curry. Listen to Face, Brown versus Curry, Monday, May 11th at 7 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT-FM.
Join us weeknights at 7 for music. From symphonies to the latest indie music, you'll hear it all weeknights at 7 only on 89.9 FM.
Deep below sea, darling, on deep blue sea. Deep below sea.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's a new group that's formed on the First Coast as a way to build on the momentum of the city's One Spark Festival. The Jacks Community of Entrepreneurs, or JaxCo, started several months ago as a 501c3 to connect and support innovators in our region. The goal, to build a vibrant startup ecosystem of innovators and resources modeled on best practices in other cities. Now today, JaxCo is going to meet as a group at the main library downtown to discuss their next steps. Co-founders Kate Stewart and Raquel Steffens are here with a preview. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you on the show. Of course, the third annual One Spark got a lot of attention this year. Lots of creators trying to gain awareness and crowdfunding. So tell us a little bit about JaxCo and how it's arisen out of this growing innovator culture here in our area.
Yeah, so what happened was that last year, I actually participated as a creator with my tech company, BucketWish.com, which is a social media platform where users are able to share their wish lists, bucket lists, and goals with their friends and family with the purpose of making them come true. And after One Spark, I would say a couple of weeks after One Spark, I kind of felt the need to figure out some sort of continuation of where to go next, who to talk to, and maybe have some peer-to-peer assistance. And I looked around a lot, and I really could not find specifically what I was looking for, especially in the peer-to-peer mentorship group. So I decided to just go ahead and email a lot of the tech creators.
You decided to take control of the
yes,
situation.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah. Which is pretty typical, I guess, in an entrepreneur. So yes, I decided to send an email and invite, you know, about 10 of them to go ahead and meet and maybe help and assist one another.
And because after the festival ends, Kate, there's sort of a loss of momentum. People have all that support during the event and leading up to the event. And then after the event, there's a letdown, right?
Absolutely. One Spark is such a benefit for this city. It's actually, I as a fan of South by Southwest, originally from Austin, I think One Spark has so much on South by. But that's true. After the One Spark excitement dies down, creators lose the community. They lose the excitement, the validation, all of the things that keep them going. So we thought, wouldn't it be important to draw best practices from other cities and have things going on year-round to support all of us as we're building our companies and validating our ideas and so on?
And what are some of the best practices? You mentioned Austin, Texas, great example. What can we learn from the success of cities like Austin?
Well, it's not just Austin. Actually, the idea of the innovation ecosystem is popping up all over the globe. And we're finding that it's happening in enough places and enough models that we can look at best practices. So, for instance, the Boulder model has been proven to be highly successful, and it has several tenets. One of them is that the ecosystem should be founded by entrepreneurs and for entrepreneurs. So obviously, an ecosystem, just like a biological ecosystem, is made up of a lot of different elements. And to be vibrant, they're all contributing, they're all gaining something. But if the focus is on the innovators and the government, the Chamber of Commerce, the higher education, all of the other assets, very strong assets that we have, support what's happening by and for entrepreneurs themselves, then they find that that generally yields the most success.
And that leads us to the JACS Coalition of Entrepreneurs. Tell us a little bit about this organization and what your goals are.
Yeah, so...
Community of Entrepreneurs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So JACS Community of Entrepreneurs really came out of this peer-to-peer group that started mainly for tech founders, but soon after we realized that many others that were not part of maybe tech projects really also needed the assistance. So that's how we came to the conclusion that JACS Community of Entrepreneurs really needed to serve everyone, anyone that has an idea or already has a business or are starting their own startups and need assistance and support. Some of the things that we want to provide is a clear way to navigate the community. Unfortunately, we do have a lot of support in Jacksonville for entrepreneurs, but the support is not easy to find. So that's something that we have been investigating for our own selves, and now we want to give that back to the rest.
So resources are in silos, in other words?
Absolutely.
And you want to break those down for people?
Yes.
Give them a roadmap?
Yes.
And you'll be talking about this at the library today, correct? Tell us about it.
Yeah, that is correct. Because we want this to be an organic community of entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs, we want the community to decide how we're going to move forward, what's important, what's missing, what does the community see as necessary to build the strength into the community. So that's what we're aiming for today. This will be the first of many things that we do. We invite anybody to come out to the library at 11 o'clock today to join in that discussion. We will be introducing some of the resources that are currently available. We'll also be introducing the plan that we have to roll out a series of peer-to-peer mentorship groups supported by professional mentors that, because we want to create an inclusive, diverse community, will be free of charge to anybody who's willing to work on the idea. Mm-hmm. And we think that that peer-to-peer mentorship group, that series of groups, will be a foundation for everything else that happens in the community as we work toward becoming an innovation center of excellence.
So as you move ahead, how do you see this community growing over the next decade or so in the city?
Well, that's an exciting question. Honestly, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else in the world right now, because the conversations that I've had make it very clear that most people do believe that Jacksonville's on a tipping point. I mean, we're right there, and there's so much support for what we can become in terms of innovation. Now, obviously, you know, we have a lot of strengths in healthcare tech and also transportation logistics and some other areas. So it's important to focus on those things. But at the same time, we have the opportunity to build a community that will help us build healthy neighborhoods, revitalize the downtown, all of the goals that, for instance, the Downtown Investment Authority and the other organizations have. So everything is dovetailing at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And we really do believe that all of us working together can raise the tide so that we all benefit.
So again, 11 a.m. today at the main library, yes?
Yes, indeed.
Yes, and we're hoping to continue this the first Tuesday and the third Tuesday of every month at the library, 11 a.m. Downtown. Anybody that needs assistance, support, by appointment, they can email us and we'll be more than happy to help them.
It's the new Jacksonville Community of Entrepreneurs, JaxCo. Come meet them today at 11 at the Downtown Main Library. Co-founders Kate Stewart, Raquel Steffens, kudos and thanks.
Thank you, Melissa.
And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. This show's producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you've got feedback about the show, we always want to hear it. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And catch our daily podcast so you can never miss a show. We're now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, an update on violent protests that erupted in Baltimore following a funeral service for a young black man who died in police custody. Next, efforts to restore order and ongoing questions about police accountability, victims' rights, and community reactions. That's coming up. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.